This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, I got a release from FNB, funnily enough, stating breathlessly that the frenzy around Valentine's Day will again see consumers spending more than usual to gift their loved ones. Past trends have indicated that FNB credit card holders spend more each year on buying flowers and perfume and other such gifts, with a 35% increase recorded last year. What are we going to see this year? So that is my first question to tonight's market commentator, Chantel Marks, Head of Equity Research at FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantel, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much. Happy Valentine's Day to you as well.
Was this satire, considering that you can't really buy anything right now because of load shedding?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek as well, but we have seen quite an increase in credit card loans extended, particularly from FNB, and this is now speaking as an analyst rather than someone working at FNB. BA 900 numbers were out yesterday showing that FNB credit card loan extensions were up by quite a bit. So people are definitely spending on their credit cards. I think what makes this year particularly tricky is the fact that there's absolutely no consumer confidence. So even though people might want to spend money on Valentine's Day or something like Valentine's Day, perhaps they won't make the big ticket purchases. They'll probably stick to chocolates and flowers, which is what I saw in the Woolworths on my way in.
It was an awful lot of that during the rounds, and we feel a little bit insulated from the rest of the world at Murrow's Arch. We've got generators. There doesn't ever seem to be load shedding around here. What is everyone complaining about? Take a drive out and to call it drive and you'll find out. Traffic lights down, people just don't want to get out there. Might it drive more consumers to online and sort of click and collect or online delivery as a result?
I actually won't be surprised because it's so awful to be on the roads at the moment. But we've already seen a massive trend towards online globally. And it's increased in its popularity in South Africa as well. Even though online penetration is still quite low, it is still growing quite rapidly. And one of the things that we're pondering about at FNB at the moment is whether or not some of the weakness that we've seen in traditional retail in South Africa has anything to do with a shift to online, whether or not companies that don't report results, maybe smaller independents, Takealot, Superbalist, might be gaining market share from the incumbents.
And that would certainly square off with the disparity that we saw in the Stats SA retail figures versus the listed retailers reporting recently. That said, though, we did see a very tepid retail number out yesterday. And certainly the consumer is under a lot of strain right now. Dis-Chem was the big loser on the day on an awful trading update. And if you consider that this is Dis-Chem, you've got the lipstick effect. People still want to look good during recessionary times, and let's face it, we're not in a technical recession just yet, but it feels like one. It certainly does at the moment. And when you are targeting a price point that is for the price sensitive consumer, and even you are struggling, boy, big flashing red lights on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so I mean, the Dis-Chem story is also quite nuanced, because Dis-Chem, retail sales looked okay. It was a little bit of a disappointment. It definitely was slower than clicks. We saw a reduction in pharmaceutical and cosmetic sales in December. But Dis-Chem actually had a huge problem at their distribution center and at their warehouse. So, or warehouses, three out of four of their warehouses experienced disruptions from labor unrest. And they actually suffered from stockouts. So not only would you have had a situation where Dis-Chem would have run out of stock, some of its kind of local choice, almost independent pharmacies or independent-ish pharmacies would have also had problems with stock. You would have seen probably a shift to clicks to a certain extent, but not, it wouldn't have fully compensated for that impact. So I'm left wondering how much that would have impacted that December number specifically, and whether or not Dis-Chem is really in trouble from a demand perspective, and whether or not it was just a supply issue.
And they wouldn't be the first retailer to have issue with their supply and distribution. ShopRite, the A-team of South African retail, have had a particularly tough time with their DC at the moment.
And before ShopRite, it was Pick and Pay, and before Pick and Pay, it was Clover. As soon as the guys start investing in distribution and they really start focusing on how to optimize their supply chain, inevitably some issues creep in because you have new technology. For example, labor is unhappy with changes. There's so much that can happen at a distribution when distribution changes.
Beware the management consultants who come with their management consultants speak about optimization and the fourth industrial revolution and all of those things. It can backfire quite badly. Just ask Alexander Forbes, former CEO, on how IT projects can backfire. Interestingly, Si Jacobs on Twitter today saying that on the conference call, I didn't listen. So this is really third party news. This, with many foreign investors listening, the call was actually made on a mobile phone because load shedding prevented a normal call. And it looks as though the battery died before completion. So that's the sort of message that load shedding is sending out to the international investor community.
How incredibly embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. It's beyond embarrassing. It's an outrage. It really is. I was chatting to Brian Cantor of Investec yesterday, and he said, as a patriotic South African, he feels angered, he feels hurt, he feels disappointed that we've allowed it to get to this stage, the stage of stage four load shedding. Do we see enough out of the president in parliament today to assuage any of those fears? Judging by the rand, the market's not buying whatever he's selling.
Well, we would have wanted a little bit more of commitment, perhaps a little bit more detail on how they will go about actually making this miraculous turnaround happen. But we kind of just got a reiteration of what we saw and what he said in the Sona. We really don't have any more information than we did then. And I think that is probably what drove the big disappointment. I mean, I was actually unable to listen to the parliamentary session this afternoon. So I decided to just do a quick Google News on Eskom. And the last thing I saw was from 8 hours ago this morning saying that stage two load shedding is going to be implemented. The president's comments didn't even make the news. So, well, print news at least.
Well, I found it quite interesting because, and it was said to me as well by a very impeccable source, Chris Yellen tweeted it out earlier today, that the big issue has been around bunkering and getting enough diesel off the ships inland to power those open cycle gas turbines. And that's really what we rely on during these stages of load shedding where other capacity is offline. But nothing of that was mentioned by the president. You would have expected him to take the public into his confidence and at least mention that and say, right, this has been the problem and this is what Eskom's management are doing to try and rectify it. So that remains, once again, unconfirmed. But as I repeat, very high-level, impeccable sources saying this. There just seems to be so much uncertainty. There's the presidential review panel that was established. There is now a cabinet committee chaired by the deputy president.
The Italians are getting involved.
Don't even go down that road because they're involved in the renewable energy program. So the unions are going to jump all over that. They're clearly not independent. They might be in the fact that they produce independent power stations, but they're certainly not independent in this review. And there are thousands of other options on the table that could have been used. So I think that was a bit of a dodgy call that. Bottom line is 2 billion rand a day. That's what this costs the economy at a time when the macro figures coming out are really, really bad. Mining plunged 4.8% in December.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Eskom story will just exasperate business confidence and consumer confidence issues that we're already facing. It's usually disruptive to the mining sector as well as the manufacturing sector. I mean, these are sectors that we really need to grow our economy, and those were kind of the areas identified where we could have had quick gains in 2019. So depending on how long this lasts, it could have far-reaching consequences for our growth expectations for the rest of the year. But to get back to mining, yes, quite a shocker for December. I don't think we were expecting anything great. We had two main issues that we faced in December in two of our large commodities that we produced. In gold, we had AMCU striking at Sibanye Gold's gold operations. Most of the shafts there were impacted. And in iron ore, we had that truck that drove through that bridge and resulted in the entire railway export railway line to Saldanha being closed off. So what Kumba Iron Ore did, and they explained this in their last trading statement or production production update. They actually decided to reduce production a little bit and do some maintenance work on some of their mines. So there was a kind of a very good reason why mining production fell quite sharply in December. Encouragingly, platinum PGM mining went up. That's actually where the money is at the moment. We're seeing strong palladium prices really being supportive of basket prices for SA miners. So not all bad. Reasons for the bad stuff.
They should call it the FNB Palladium card. I think I said it to you last time around. It really is the unsung hero of the PGM basket at the moment. Chantel, stay right there. We just need to cross to Pusaletto now to find out what's happening out in the traffic. I can probably save everyone a lot of time. Nothing much. I'm sure everyone is at a standstill.
In Gauteng and the Western Cape, this is Classic Business.
Well, it was all going so well on the JSE until those US retail sales numbers did a rock set and it was all crash, boom, bang. Chantel Marks, Head of Equity Research at F&B Wealth and Investments, is in the studio to give us her view on a bit of a topsy-turvy day. It really fell apart very late in the day, Chantel.
Yes, and I mean, even as it fell apart, it started looking like it could make a comeback at some point, yeah, just before five, and then a little bit of a sell down again towards the end of the day, closing, I think, just slightly in the red, ultimately. Very much driven by a weak rand, market movements today. Financial sector was particularly weak, and that is most exposed to a weak rand. Initially, we said that the rand was weaker because of a stronger dollar. But as the dollar weakened after those retail sales numbers, the rand just stayed pretty soft. What I think it's about right now is it really does have a lot to do with Eskom and the fact that there really wasn't a proper plan presented today. And there will likely have to be a government bailout, which would be negative for our kind of fiscal position. So from an expenditure perspective, that'll come through. And we might have to take on some of that debt. So all of that really contributing to weakness in the local currency and as a result, rand sensitives being sold off today.
And it really doesn't look good. If the diesel has arrived and you are now going to be burning through millions of litres of diesel every day, that's going to be an expensive exercise at a point where the utility is technically insolvent.
Yeah, well, apparently they've scrapped the term technically insolvent, the Public Enterprises Department. So apparently it's just now facing severe liquidity constraints.
Well, and I agree with him because you can't be technically insolvent if the sovereign stands behind you. And ultimately you socialize the losses through taxpayer funded bailouts.
Yes, and its asset base is still quite substantial, right?
Well, even though they would have you believe that it's over a trillion rand. I've spoken to a few energy analysts who say maybe a third of that.
Yeah, well, if it's only a third of that, then they are probably technically insolvent if they were to be responsible for all of their own debt. But certainly Eskom being front and center of the market at the moment, you wouldn't think it would impact the equity market that much, but it's having an extremely detrimental effect.
Then IRBA held hearings for KPMG today, and the wheels of accountability seem to grind exceedingly slow on this issue. What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, KPMG now basically just face a probe in terms of whether or not they're going to be sanctioned around the work that they did for Gupta entities. I think this is just another kind of cog in the wheel of state capture that that we need to expose almost and that we need to get to the bottom of. Also, it just speaks to kind of a shift towards corporate governance becoming front and center. We need to focus on this stuff a lot more. KPMG really just, I'm sure that they were kind of the worst hit, but I'm sure that they're not the only auditing firm or service provider in South Africa that have done questionable things or practices, engaged in questionable practices.
Very, very diplomatic there.
I am trying very hard.
You were involved in, we have to call it because there's been no criminal conviction, alleged fraud and malfeasance related to state capture. If we look at IRBA, though, there's a piece of legislation that really irked the big four financial, big four auditing firms. And it gives Urba some pretty sweeping powers of search and seizure, even more so than the South African Police Service. So it's a space that we're watching with great interest. It does look like Urba is trying to beef up its powers and give itself some teeth. But that, for me, crosses a particular line. Then Italtile starts its year, its financial, on a very positive note. It celebrates its golden anniversary this year, and the group reported a 13% increase in headline earnings in this market. That is really something to cheer.
Yes, I mean, when you look at kind of building supplies, the retail space around building supplies generally, it's been quite mixed. And you can, for example, Build It did very well in the SPAR results as well. Mm-hmm. Cash Build's been very weak. Builders Wares hasn't been anything to write home about. Italtile, a very niche kind of space as well, so very specialized. Perhaps those numbers were a little bit flattered by some acquisitions that they made more recently, particularly in the manufacturing space. But still, they did extremely well to get double-digit growth in an environment like this.
Oh, and Heineken adds a bit of fizz if you have a read-through for AB InBev here. Strong second-half results out of Heineken.
Yeah, quite positive for AB InBev. They play in lots of the same markets. Surprisingly, it seems as if they also did quite well in South Africa, but we know that beverage sales here haven't been particularly strong, so perhaps taking some market share locally from AB InBev, but ultimately I think net a positive read across. Perhaps one of the things that we'll focus on when AB InBev releases results is the US. So Heineken, even though everything looked quite good, the US was extremely soft. Anheuser-Busch has quite a big exposure to the US through Budweiser. So we'll have to see whether or not they gained market share or whether that market just is still as soggy as it has been over the last few years.
And one market that is doing well, but one particular model falling out of the sky today is Airbus's Mammoth A380. It's said to stop manufacturing that. There are shifts in the way people fly, the aircraft maker said. Is this massive news for Boeing? Do you think Boeing gets a leg up from this?
Well, it's actually quite sad. I mean, these are those massive airplanes that they advertise when you're on an Emirates flight on economy class to Dubai, and there's a bar and basically a disco. It's huge and
almost like flying on the Gupta jet.
Exactly. The idea was that you were going to be able to land at some of these, or you were going to be able to fly out of some of these huge airports. Air traffic was going to increase. It was going to be centered around these aerotropolises. I think that is probably the wrong plural.
Aerotropoli.
And what ultimately happened was that people actually just decided they were sick of these big airports and they shifted to smaller regional airports like Lanseria. You can see the kind of growth that we've seen in Lanseria.
Which is a construction site at the moment, by the
yes.
way, if you've got to walk through that parking lot.
But so are many of these regional airports, so it just speaks to their popularity. So in terms of Boeing, I don't necessarily think they'll get a particular leg up from this. I think Airbus will probably shift its focus to some of its smaller models, which they do have. But I think a big disappointment for that company, they invested a lot of time and money in that model.
Chantal Marks, Head of Equity Research at F&B Wealth and Investments, with your view from the markets here on Classic Business.